So right now we get to wrap up this series. 8 weeks in the book of James, series called Make It Real. This has been such a joy for me. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I hope it's been an encouragement and a challenge to you. And as we wrap up, I thought we could start with road signs. Because I know some of you are in high school, and you're in driver's training right now, and also because I've been out on the roads. I'm just saying, some of us could use a little review. That was mean. Okay, let's do this. I'm going to show you a road sign, and then you try to figure out what it is. Okay, here we go. First one. The roundabout. Okay, now this is important for me because they just put a roundabout by my house. And I'll be honest, I'm still kind of figuring it out. It's like, do you use the turn signal? I don't know. And just, you know, you can get stuck in that thing. So just be aware that, how about this one? Keep right, except to pass. Okay, a moment of vulnerability for me. If you were to ask my wife when I am at my absolute worst as a human being, it is when somebody is in the left lane and they're not driving fast enough. So if that's you, just very politely, stop it, okay? That's not what that lane is for. And now that we're all fired up, why don't we do another one here? Do you know what this one is? Anybody know what this one is? This is the zipper merge sign, okay? Now, we need to talk this over because we are not on the same page here, okay? Some of you are driving 85 down that lane that's about to end, I mean, inches away from the orange cone and you're whipping in. Others of you, 4 miles before the merge, you've got this huge truck and you're blocking traffic. I'm just saying, can we get on the same page here? Okay, sorry, I gotta get that off my chest. How about this one? What do we call this one? The Michigan turn. This one's great, especially when somebody's visiting from out of state. They're like, what is this? What do I do? How does this work? One more. Rough road. And usually it's like rough road ahead. Now, it's March in Michigan. We're right around the corner is spring, and which is also known as pothole season. So we're going to need some of these signs for the potholes that we'll be dodging. But there's another version of this sign, you know, where it's construction, and it's like you're going to be miles now of just really bumpy road, the kind of thing that had you known the road was going to be like that, you would have taken another direction. Now, here's the question for today. Anyone traveling down a rough road? And of course, now I'm not talking about driving. I'm talking about life. Anybody traveling down a rough road right now? I mean, some of us, it's like you're just not ready for next week because you're still recovering from last week and you could really use an extra weekend before you dive back into the week. And others of us, it's much longer than a week because truthfully, you're just traveling through one of the toughest stretches of your life and it's a rough road that you're on. And this is what we're going to talk about today, how to navigate these difficult seasons of life, how to get through them, and how to endure them faithfully as Jesus followers. And James, this has been a theme throughout the book of James, this idea of enduring hardship and faithfully enduring for Christ. In fact, you may remember week one of this series, when we were in chapter one of the book of James, you may remember this verse right here where James said, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds." And I really don't like that word whenever, because it's like, yeah, it's going to happen. You will have seasons of life that are a rough road. And then today, as we close out this series, very last chapter of James, we find these words. Is anyone among you in trouble? And that word trouble, what it really means is suffering. Is anyone among you suffering? And of course, the audience that James is writing to, they were suffering because these were people who had been part of his church in Jerusalem. They had seen some of their church leaders imprisoned and killed. Many of them had been forced to flee Jerusalem because of persecution, left their families, their communities, their jobs, and now they are displaced people. They are essentially refugees living in the areas around Jerusalem. And as we discovered last week, many of them are now suffering at the hands of these wealthy landowners, these guys who have these huge farms that are exploiting these Christians and for cheap labor. And so, yes, these people are suffering. But that was them. What about you? I wonder what you're going through right now. I wonder what you are enduring. And I know that some of you, the faith in Jesus that you have, that's so meaningful for you, it's just not a faith that your family shares. It's not a faith that some of your closest friends share, and they don't get it. And so you encounter resistance. Sometimes you encounter ridicule. And so it's like you're all in with Jesus, but in terms of your friends and your family's response, it's been a rough road. Others of you, maybe it's what's going on in the world, maybe it's what's going on in your world, but anxiety. The anxiety about the future. Or maybe this is just a season of life where you're just sad. I mean, you're just down, you are depressed. Whatever it is, you might just go, yeah, mental health, emotional health right now, it's just a rough road. And others of you, well, there was a time when your body just worked right. It just worked the way that it should, but that's not today. That's not how things are going. Fatigue, pain, perhaps, I mean, it's worse than that. Some of you, I know, there's a diagnosis, it's cancer, but I mean, you're fighting for your life. And you might just say, yeah, my health, it's just been a rough road. So I don't know what it is. It's your family, your career, money. I know some of you are traveling through a season of grief, but this rough road that you're on, James has powerful words, encouraging, challenging words on how to endure faithfully. But the big question is just how? I mean, that's great. We all want to endure faithfully, but how actually do you do that? When such a big part of you just wants to numb or escape or do some stuff that you know is not healthy, but man, it would just feel good right now. So how do you actually faithfully endure? And that is a very important question. Because we all know that not everybody does well on the rough road. And people fall apart and people implode. And I don't want that for me and I don't want that for you. On the flip side, traveling through the rough road, this can be an incredible time of growth. Spiritually, I mean, this can be a season where your closest and most important relationships get closer. This can be a time when your character is refined. And that's what I want. And that's what I want for you. And so let's explore what James has to say about traveling through rough roads. We're going to look at three invitations to trust God when traveling the rough road. And the first one I'm calling see the rain. You've got to see the rain. So we're in James chapter 5, starting out in verse 7. James says, be patient then, brothers and sisters, until the Lord's coming. In light of everything that you've been through, he says to them, in light of what you're going through right now, be patient. And he connects it with the Lord's coming, this idea that Jesus will return. And he's offering them, reminding them of this ultimate hope that we have as Jesus followers, that one day Jesus will come back. And what's so great about that? I mean, why is that going to be so amazing? Well, we get a picture of what life will be like when Jesus returns from the very last book of the Bible. It's called the Revelation of John. So one of Jesus' disciples, the Apostle John, when he was an old man, he received a vision from God of the future. And within that vision, that's what is the book of Revelation, we get a picture of what it's going to be like when Jesus returns. And I just want us to experience this together. So I'm going to read it to you. If you want to check this out later, it comes from Revelation 21. This is John talking. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, look, God's dwelling place is now among the people. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. He who was seated on the throne said, I am making everything new. He gives us this picture of heaven crashing into earth, God dwelling with us. And life will be different because there will be no more pain or suffering, no more cancer, no more divorce, no more war. I mean, there will be no more rough roads to travel. sermon that I'm giving right now on how to endure faithfully, it'll be absolutely unnecessary when Christ returns. And don't you just long for that day? Don't you just look forward to that day? Aren't you so grateful that we have this promise in front of us? But we're not there yet. Because we live in this between Jesus coming as a man and giving his life on that Roman cross, and then Jesus returning someday and making everything new. And the question is, what do you do in the between on the rough road? And James says, be patient, which is another way of saying trust God, trust his way, and endure faithfully. But again, easier said than done. I mean, that's what we want to do, but how do you actually do it? And James, he gives us an example to follow. He says, see how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, patiently waiting for the autumn and spring rains. He goes, look at the farmer. Be like the farmer. Now, farmers just have an insane amount of patience and endurance as they wait for the harvest to come. And then James gives us this bit about the rain, waiting for the autumn and spring rains. And this is really important as we talk about how to navigate the rough roads. So let's talk about rain for a moment. Now, the reaction that we have to rain, I think, would have been very different to the reaction that the first century Jewish believers that James is writing to, the kind of reaction they would have to rain. Because I mean, for me, when I see rain, it's like, bummer. You know, plans are ruined. It's like day at the beach, well, it's off. Oh man, do we really want to go camping in the rain? Probably not. It's raining. We can't send the kids outside. Usually it's like bummer, rain. But I don't think that's how these first century Jewish believers who had grown up in the land of Israel, how they would have responded to rain. And here's part of the reason. Here's a picture of the promised land of Israel. It's pretty dry. It's kind of like desert wilderness. This is what most of the land of Israel looks like. See, in West Michigan, we have a bazillion rivers and lakes. They did not. And so if it doesn't rain in Israel, I mean, this is really the only source for water. And so if it doesn't rain, I mean, you're not going to have crops. And if you don't have crops, you're not going to have food. And if you're not going to have food. And so when I see rain in the forecast, it's like, bummer, man, plans ruined. And I believe these first century Jewish Jesus followers, when they saw rain, they would have fallen to their knees in gratitude and worship because God has provided. And so my point is, you've got to see the rain. If you're going to endure faithfully these difficult seasons, you've got to stop and you've got to see the rain. Those moments when God shows up. Those times when God just gifts you, when he provides for you, when you see his blessing in your life, you've got to stop and you've got to see the rain because this is what will sustain you and remind you that he is good and that he is with you and that you can faithfully endure. And so let me ask you a question. Where have you seen the rain recently in your life? Where have you seen God's provision, his goodness, his kindness in your life? Where have you seen the rain? So often it's the small things. You know, usually February in Michigan, what do we get, about 5 minutes of sunshine? You know, it's not great. It's so cloudy. It's so gray. This February has been very unusual. It's been warm. It's been sunny. I mean, last week, it was 70 degrees in February in Michigan. And so I pumped up my tires, I filled up my water bottle, I threw on my helmet, and I hit the road. I rode my bike in a t-shirt in 70 degrees in Michigan in February. That is a gift. I mean, that is God's goodness. You've got to stop and you've got to see the rain. And so where have you seen the rain in your life? It's often people. It's often God using people in your life. You're going through a hard time and your neighbor shovels your driveway. Your neighbor mows your lawn. Again, in the same month of February in Michigan. It's just weird. But often it's a text from a friend at just the right moment with these encouraging words. It's your small group. I mean, how could you get through this difficult season of life without your small group? You've got to stop and you've got to see the rain, the way that God shows up in your life and blesses you, provides for you, his goodness in your life. This is what sustains us. This is what enables us to stay faithful. Because James says, look, there's this day coming when Jesus will return. He will make everything new. There will be no rough roads to travel. We have this incredible promise, but between now and then, endure faithfully. And to do that, you've got to be like the farmer. You've got to see the rain. So that you can trust God's goodness and trust his way. And this is really important, trusting his way, because something we know about traveling on rough roads is these are the seasons where we experience the greatest temptation to wander from God's ways, to chase after unhealthy things. Because these are the moments when we are most vulnerable, when we are lonely, when we are weak, and when we are hurting. And so this brings us to the second invitation to trust God on the rough road. We've got to stand firm. So back to James' letter, verse 8 of chapter 5, he says, "You too, be patient and stand firm, because the Lord's coming is near. Like the farmer, be patient, but also stand firm." And again, he references Jesus will return. And there is something in us, those of us who are Jesus followers, when we think about Jesus returning, we want him to be proud of us. We want him to, you know, those words that we often hear, "Well done, good and faithful servant." That's what we want to hear. We want to be faithful to him. We want to honor him with our lives. When he returns, we want him to be proud of how we have followed after him. But in order to do that, we have to stand firm. We have to resist temptation. We have to say no to these desires that we have, especially on the rough road. But again, easier said than done. So how do you actually do it? I mean, how do you actually stand firm when life is really hard and really lonely and you're feeling tempted to wander from God's way? Well, I think it's important to remember how James' original audience, the people who read this letter, how they would have received James' letter. And of course, it's probably obvious, but they didn't get it in an email because, you know, technology. But also, they didn't get his letter in their personal mailbox, like snail mail. No, the way that they would have heard James' letter for the first time is what we're doing right now, gathered as a church community. It would have been read out loud to the entire church. You see, James didn't write his letter to individual Jesus followers. He wrote his letter to church communities. And so when he says stand firm, he's essentially saying stand firm together. In other words, you will need each other in order to actually resist the temptation while you're on the rough road. In my experience, you cannot stand firm alone. The temptation is just too strong. And I just think this is important for us to think about, because we're Americans, and there's nothing wrong with being American. It's great to be an American. Our culture, right or wrong, is very individualistic. And so often when we read the Bible, we just kind of think of it and assume that it's like God wrote this to me. And of course, there is this element where this is God's word for me, but just understand, almost every single letter and book in the Bible was written to communities of believers, not to individuals. And so it's all about standing firm together. So what does that look like? I mean, how do you actually live this out? What do you got to do? Well, James gives us a couple clues as he wraps up his letter. For example, in verse 16 of chapter 5, he says, "Therefore, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you may be healed." Confess your sins to each other and pray for each other. There's just got to be some space in your life where you can go, hey, this is what's going on. This is what I'm dealing with. This is how I'm feeling about it. Or even, you know, hey, this is where I messed up. This is what I did. There's got to be a small circle of trusted Jesus followers in your life where you can, two words I think that are so important here, vulnerability and accountability. Two words where a small circle where you can be accountable and you can be vulnerable. Because again, you can't stand firm alone. We need each other. So you need this small circle where you can open up about what's really going on. And yeah, I know what many of you are thinking right now. It's the same reaction I have. It's like, yeah, no thanks. Nope. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm good. Hey, I'm not perfect. I struggle like everybody else, but no thanks. Because opening up, accepting accountability, being vulnerable, that's a hassle. It's not very fun. And guess what? It's risky. But here's something I really want you to hear today. To not choose accountability and vulnerability is far more risky than choosing to open up and trust people with what's really going on in your life. And James kind of talks about this at the very end of his letter. He says, my brothers and sisters, if one of you should wander from the truth and someone should bring that person back, remember this. And I just want to pause right there. If one of you should wander from the truth and someone should bring that person back. Listen, it doesn't matter who you are, whether you've been a believer for 40 years or a brand new believer last week. Every single one of us is capable of wandering. And more than that, every single one of us is capable of falling into sins. And I'm talking about the kind of sins that blow up your family, derail your career, and wreck your reputation. We are all prone to wander. None of us is immune. And it's like, who is in a position in your life that they could bring you back? Who is in a position in your life that they could go chase you down because they know you're wandering? And then he gets into this stuff that sounds pretty disturbing. He says, remember this, whoever turns a sinner from the error of their ways will save them from death and cover over a multitude of sins. Powerful words. What does it mean? Well, of course, we know that the consequences for sin is death, as in physical and spiritual death. But there's something else here too, I think. And that is, never underestimate the destructive power of sin in your life. Because the truth is, when you choose to ignore God's way and just, you know what, I'm just going to chase after this because I want it, never underestimate the destructive power of sin, because something always dies. Trust dies. Your reputation dies. A relationship dies. Something always dies. Never underestimate the destructive power of sin in our lives. And so when you wander, who's in a position to go chase you down and to just gently say, this is not right, this is not for you? Accountability and vulnerability. When you're traveling the rough road, you've got to have this. And my encouragement, my challenge for you is, don't wait to build these kind of relationships until you're already traveling the rough road. Because frankly, at that point, it's probably too late. And the thing about building these kind of relationships, I mean, they take time. They take time. And so build them now. And if you're looking for a great place to start, I mean, this is why we do small groups. And I just think that a men's group or a women's group, this is a great place to start building these kind of relationships, to be vulnerable, to seek accountability. And it's just so important that we invest in these kinds of relationships. Now, speaking of relationships, something else that we all know to be true about the rough road and traveling through difficult seasons is, well, they tend to put a strain on relationships. I mean, relationships have a tendency to go sideways on the rough road. And so let's talk about this for a few moments. Last invitation here, the third invitation to trust God on the rough road is to go to God. So James brings up something interesting, verse 9. He says, "Don't grumble against one another, brothers and sisters, or you will be judged. The judge is standing at the door." That's another reference to Jesus returning and also bringing judgment. But he says, don't grumble against one another. Why would James need to say this? Probably because they were grumbling against each other. They weren't getting along. And like we've said, when you're traveling the rough road, I mean, I'll just speak personally. When I'm frustrated, when I'm sad, when I'm angry, I'm not very easy to be around. It's hard to be in a relationship with me when I'm traveling down a rough road. And so it makes sense to me that these first century Jesus followers and everything that they were going through, had been through, there was probably relational tension. So he says, don't grumble against each other. But you know what? I think there's something else here too. I wonder, you know, we've been talking about these rich, wealthy landowners who were exploiting the believers. I wonder, with how fast the gospel of Jesus was spreading at this point in history and how many people were coming to faith across all levels of Roman society, I wonder if some of those wealthy landowners were becoming believers. And just imagine what it would be like. You walk into church on Sunday, you look across the room, and there's one of those guys. It's like public enemy number one. This guy has made your life miserable. He is like the villain of your story. And it's like, what is he doing here? I think they probably would have grumbled. So here's where I'm going with this. Often, when you find yourself on a rough road, it's because somebody put you there. It's because somebody said something. It's because somebody did something that puts you in this difficult space. Somebody walked out on you. Somebody fired you. Somebody lied to you. Often, when we find ourselves on a rough road, somebody had something to do with that. Somebody put us there. And, you know, there's a realization that many of us have had, looking back on our upbringing, looking back on our childhood, and maybe this hits you in therapy. I mean, I don't know, but it's just, you look back and you go, yeah, there were some things about that was pretty dysfunctional. And you realize how much that has impacted you, how it impacts you internally and relationally. And it's just like, yeah, sometimes when you're on a rough road, somebody puts you there. And there's just one more aspect of this that I think is important to note, is that some of us, if we're really honest, I mean, deep down what we really think, we would go, yeah, this rough road that I'm on, yeah, God put me here. Because he could have fixed it. He could have prevented it. He could have changed them. Sometimes we find ourselves in space where we just go, yeah, God, you put me on this rough road. So what do you do with these dark, complicated, messy emotions that come with being on a rough road? Heavy, dark, complicated, messy emotions that just wreak havoc on us and cause all kinds of problems in our relationships. What do you do with these? This is a really important question. And James offers us counsel, and I'm telling you, this right here has the power to change your life. This is where we started. James says, "Is anyone among you in trouble? Is anyone among you suffering? Let them pray. Is anyone happy? Let them sing songs of praise." It's pretty simple, pretty basic. But it's just, hey, are you sad? Are you suffering? Are you in pain? Bring that to God. Are you happy? Are you full of joy? Are you filled with gratitude? Bring that to God. And the idea is, whatever you are feeling, whatever you are experiencing, bring that and express that honestly to God. That's the invitation. And I know what some of you are thinking. No, I can't do that. I'm not going to do that. Because it's like all that bitterness, all that anger, I can't bring that to God. It wouldn't be good. It probably wouldn't be right. And you know what? I get that. Because I spent a pretty long time in my life thinking that really the only way you could approach God is if you were in good space. It's like all your prayers have to be happy. Oh God, we're just so thankful. We're so glad. And just, you know, I'll just wait until I get my stuff together before I go to him. And that's often how we feel. But I don't think like that anymore. And the reason is the book of Psalms. So book of Psalms, you crack your Bible open right down the middle and you're gonna hit the Psalms because it's a huge book. 150 different Psalms are in there. And what they are songs. The book of Psalms is ancient Israel's worship book. And if you read through it, you will find all kinds of dark, disturbing, messy emotions. You will find, God, where are you? You will find, God, I thought you loved me. You will find, God, that person over there that did that thing to me, wipe them out, destroy them. Seriously. You will find all kinds of dark, messy emotions. And it's like, how did that stuff get in the Bible? Like, did somebody miss it in the edit? I mean, what happened? No, it's in there intentionally. God wants it there. And here's what I've discovered about the book of Psalms. The Psalms are meant to coach us and guide us and give us language on how to engage with God in every kind of emotional space that we find ourselves in. God wants us to do this. He invites us to do this. He welcomes us when we do this. And I'm telling you, you need to do this. Don't withdraw, don't pull back, don't say, I'll go to God when I get my stuff together. Don't isolate, no, bring yourself in emotional honesty and express that to God. It is crucial for getting through the rough roads in a healthy way, emotionally and spiritually. And so what I wanna do now is I wanna introduce you to a couple who is doing this. And this is a couple from our Cascade campus, Dustin and Sarah Osborne. And the truth is, they're traveling a very difficult road because they lost a young child recently to an accident. And it's just really, really hard. But what happened is they sat down with Kyle Pierpont, campus pastor here at Cascade, and they were willing to share part of their story with all of us. And what's so powerful about their story is that they are still grieving. They are still on the rough road, and yet they are choosing to be emotionally honest, to trust God, and to believe that there is joy coming someday. And so I want you to hear and experience their story, and then I'll come back up and close this out.
I'm Sarah.
I'm Dustin. And we have three beautiful kids, Charlotte, who's 6, Luca, who's 4, and Noah, who's 1.
So on May 31st of last year, it was a regular day. It was beautiful. It was like unseasonably warm. Dustin was going to do some grilling for us, so I went ahead and gave Noah a bath early, got back out to the living room, put some toys down for him, put him down on the floor like I had done so many times before. And I was just a few steps away from Noah when I heard him start crying, and I turned and I saw that this little end table that Dustin's dad had made for us, beautiful, a couple Christmases ago, and he had pulled it down on himself. So I scooped him up really quickly, comforted him, and I took him downstairs.
I could tell right away something was not right, he wasn't fully breathing. As she was on the phone with 911, we laid him in the grass. Actually, I was the one who administered CPR. He started breathing again.
The ambulance came, whisked him away to the hospital. The doctors were telling us that his vitals were good. And so there was a period of time where we thought that, you know, he was gonna be okay.
After about 4 or 5 minutes, I would say, some people came out of the room and they were administering CPR, so his heart had stopped. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, throughout the next probably 20 or 25 minutes, you know, tried to get it started again and just couldn't. And they asked if we wanted to go see him, which we did. And I just, you know, I just held him. We got home that night and obviously had to share with the kids what had happened.
We sat outside.
We just sat outside on the cement and just looked up at heaven and just tried to explain the best we could to Charlotte and Lucra.
You know, he went to be with Jesus and we'll be with him again someday. We know that God promises to be close to the brokenhearted. But in the days to follow, I didn't feel that to be true. And I remember texting Kyle, you know, God promised us this. I don't feel him. Where is he? Like, we need him now more than ever, you know? And this was just a tragic accident. And God knew it was coming. And, you know, it wasn't anybody's fault.
That's something Kyle helped us with a lot early on, was we were angry and sad and all of the emotions you can think from a negative standpoint is almost unbearable. It's, you know, I look back and wonder how we even got through it. Quite honestly, looking back on it, it wasn't our strength. It wasn't something that we did. It was, yeah, it's almost like, it's just weird. I mean, there are tons of stories that obviously we could share, but I think it was just things people said or the right person coming in our life at the exact right time. That was God working in ways to be able to help us through that. And without him, without God, we would have never been able to get through that.
I think that as time goes on, the light breaks through, and you know, every day a little bit more and a little bit more, until hopefully someday that the pendulum swings back and it's predominantly joy and happiness again. But right now we're just not there, and I don't know when that will be, but we just, you know, continue to pray about it. God, show us the ways that we can find joy in each day. And he does.
You know, part of what I find so moving and so powerful in their story is just a couple phrases that they used. One being, we're not there yet. It's like there's this hope of joy returning and a belief God will return joy to our lives, but we're not there yet. And the willingness to be honest about their anger, their confusion, I just think that's a powerful example. For those of us who find ourselves on a rough road, this is how you get through this in an emotionally healthy way. And secondly, this phrase that Sarah used, there are moments or occasions when the light breaks through. And the willingness in that incredibly dark space to just go, okay, that was God. And that's his goodness. And this person that he put in our lives who said this thing, I mean, that's God's goodness. That is the light breaking through. The language that we've been using in our time today is you gotta see the rain. I mean, if you're going to get through this rough road, you have to be willing to go, okay, there's God. And so that's just a beautiful example for us to follow. I want to close our time with a hymn, an old one that many of us know. It's called It Is Well With My Soul. And I just want to give you a time to engage with God. And, you know, this could look like a couple different ways. First off, I think some of us, just the opportunity to express to God, it is well with my soul, no matter what is going on, because of who you are and what you have done. And then for others of us, I mean, we just have to be honest. It is not well in my heart. And just to be able to talk to God about what you're feeling and what's going on and express maybe some of those difficult emotions that you're wrestling with. And then also just to pray. This passage from James that we've been looking at, are you suffering? Are you in trouble? Pray. Pray to him in all these different spaces. Bring that to God. And so some of our ministry leaders will be in the front in all of our different environments, and this just might be an opportunity for you to come forward, even during the song, after the song, doesn't matter, for somebody to say, how can I pray for you? And for you to just be prayed over. And so I just want to invite you to stand as we close our time in worship and engage with your God. Go to him with wherever you are.